Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. Tonight's guest studies sea slugs as a Master of Science candidate at the California Academy of Sciences and San Francisco State University. When not in the lab, he hosts the interactive Science Happy Hour series, Science Neat. The next one is next Wednesday at El Rio in San Francisco. He uses watercolors and digital media to make science more accessible to wider audiences. He also creates and facilitates unique research experiences for high school students. Shale Matsuda also happens to be transgender. Next Tuesday, as part of the Bay Area Science Festival, he'll talk at a Story Collider and Inquiring Minds event about his experiences in the close quarters of a scientific field expedition while transitioning from female to male, and about some of the parallels he sees between his personal journey and his development as a scientist. A little bit more detail on my guest's scientific specialty. He works in marine and evolutionary biology and biodiversity, studying the evolutionary relationships of a group of mollusks called nudibranchs. That's the scientific name for sea slugs. Studying these relationships, Shale says, helps us understand evolutionary history, biodiversity, and ecology, and there are potential medical uses of some of the marine biochemicals he's studying. Shale Matsuda, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thanks a lot.
So first of all, what is the Story Collider, and how do you happen to be on this panel next Wednesday?
Great. The Story Collider event is a podcast produced in New York. It's also a live talk series, and it's about how science shapes our lives. It's talks by scientists, kind of looking at the different ways that science influenced us, changed us, and it's more of an intimate evening.
Okay, so what will you be talking about?
So I was asked to participate because I'm friends with some of the folks that are helping to organize the event, and I had this really interesting story come up where I was in the Philippines on my first field expedition, and kind of right at the same time was coming into my own as a scientist, really getting, you know, the nitty-gritty of what it was like to be out in the field, but also at the same time, I was right at the beginning of my transition, dealing with hormones and pronouns and everything like that, and so kind of looking at how those two things kind of came to a head for me all at the same time in a completely different country.
Okay. So can you tell us about that experience in the Philippines? Actually, I don't know if you want to read the blog entry now, but you do have a blog that talks about some of this journey. And I think you're a great writer. I really liked the colorful way you described a lot of these things. Do you want to read that now?
Yeah, sure. That's
great. Okay.
Cool. All right. So May 20th, 2014. Dear San Francisco, I have a confession. I miss you. More than I'd like to admit. I'm sitting outside on the patio overlooking the Verde Island Passage. It's just before sunset and the sky is glowing. There's a slight breeze and I'm sipping on a mango shake. In 30 minutes, I'll run upstairs and grab my gear for our night dive. My muscles are the good kind of sore and I'm sun-kissed. I'm able to identify so many more nudibranch species underwater, and I've probably eaten an entire chocolate cake. As far as science goes, this is pretty much the best. Wake up at 6 a.m. every day, eat breakfast, do two 90-minute dives, eat lunch, process specimens, maybe do a night dive, dinner, share a bucket of beer, process more specimens, sleep. Being here is not so subtle reminder of how happy I am in this career choice, how excited I am to be working towards someday being able to run an expedition like this myself. There is no better way to learn than in the field. And I've thought a lot about PESMAYA, the volunteer coral reef monitoring project I joined 5 years ago when I wanted to make sure that a career change to biology was what I wanted to do. I was as sure then as I am now. Now, transitioning as a graduate student has been one of the most challenging spaces I've had to navigate. First, I have to note that I've gotten nothing but acceptance and support from everyone, which means the world to me. I had been so scared of how my transition might impact my career. What's so tough about it out here in the Philippines is twofold: how I'm seen and treated by others, and how I see myself. We're all living in pretty close quarters here. I was assigned a cis male roommate for the first week, something my advisor checked in with me about in advance. And it's the first time that I've spent this much time with everyone. There are also folks from other institutions and other departments that I'm less familiar with. So, as to be expected, I got shied a lot right off the bat, and I had to decide on the fly if and how to have the gender conversation with folks who I wanted to respect me professionally. The guy I roomed with was a casual acquaintance from the museum, someone I hadn't personally told about being transgender. I saw him downstairs having a drink with the guys, so I thought it was safe to go upstairs and give myself a shot. I was debating if I should bring it up to him when he walked in on me. We ended up having a really good conversation about it. He's actually family, too. And I did with some of the other visiting researchers. But it's really challenging being around people who still see me as female, even though they want to be supportive. But the she's are turning into she-he corrections, and a lot of folks seem to be just avoiding pronouns altogether. Which is where you come in, San Francisco. Even though the she's are par for the course, it's usually way offset by the overwhelming amount of support and community, the power of being around people who aren't just supportive, but who really understand, who get it. Now that's gold. The days are hot. The work is hard. The sleep is little. And with that, the weight of the reminders that I was born in a female body is heavier. Which brings me to how I'm seeing myself. It's hard to be pre-op in the tropics. It's hot. Many days it's over 100 degrees. I wear more clothing swimming than most people do on a cool San Francisco day. Also, it's hard to hide your body in a wetsuit. It just is. I'm leaving the expedition tomorrow for a week on the beach. Time to think, reflect, and rebuild my confidence that being who I am and being patient in this process is worth it. San Francisco, I'll see you soon.
So that was recent, just May.
Yeah, it was very recent, and so much has changed since then, too.
Okay. Tell me about it.
Oh, wow. About the changes or about...
About the changes, thing? About how it's... there's a bunch of things I'm curious about here. One thing is, what kind of questions did your fellow researchers on this expedition have for you? Did they have questions, or did they just kind of, like, avoid it? And you mentioned the he, she,
avoidance
of pronouns altogether. And, I think that's something a lot of us go through.
Definitely. It was a really good experience. It was really a game changer, honestly. Like, in terms of the science and the gender thing, I talked about it with my colleagues before. Everyone was like really on board, but it's a lot easier to kind of avoid those conversations and to kind of honestly avoid a lot of gender related issues when you're only seeing folks for a few hours a day. But when you're living places and you're seeing each other in a little bit more stressful conditions,
right.
Moving around, it can be a little bit trickier. And it was really rough at first, but like as time went by, people kept on remembering. It just got easier. You kind of saw, in the conversations I had personally with other folks too, like those were easier. And I had a lot of moments where I would be really scared to, bring it up to someone to mm-hmm. ask, hey, like, here's what's going on. And was always really surprised about how wonderful everybody was. And for me personally, it was a really intense time because right before the expedition, I had my hormone levels increased. So not only was I, juggling being a scientist and, adjusting to being in a foreign country and dealing with gender, also just like the mental and physical adjustments to the amount of testosterone that I was on was also something that was playing a role in it. But but since coming back, things have been a lot more supportive.
And any graduate student in that situation, you're going through the thing of like your first major field expedition to kind of having to prove yourself as a scientist.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the overriding thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there was hiccups in the road there too. Mm-hmm. I showed up for my first dive and realized I had brought all the wrong gear for collecting. And so it was a lot of just kind of piecing things together, which is, I guess, what a lot of, field work really is. It's kind of looking at what's available to you and making it work. And that was kind of like the theme for the whole trip. And it was a big experience, not just for me, getting used to what this kind of work was like, but also in figuring out who I was too on that journey.
You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. My guest is Shale Matsuda, graduate student, marine biology researcher at the California Academy of Sciences. He'll be sharing with us his love of science and some of his personal story. He'll be speaking at the Story Collider series next Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. at the Rickshaw Stop on Fell Street in San Francisco. And next Wednesday at Science Neat at El Rio on Mission Street near Cesar Chavez. Both events are part of the Bay Area Science Festival, which runs through November 1st. You can learn more at bayareascience.org. You mentioned also in there, a couple little terms. Cis male roommate. What does that mean? What's cis male?
Great question. it's a great question in terms of science as well. It's kind of, cis is someone who is born with the physical anatomy that they identify with as far as their gender is concerned, too. And it's kind of the opposite of trans, it's transgender, which is something that's it's actually a chemistry term. So okay. When you're looking at a structure of a molecule, like trans and cis has to do with like the way that the different atoms are aligned. Okay. And so as being next to or across from.
Okay. And chocolate cake. Eat a lot of chocolate cake.
Oh, it was so good. After hours of diving, it's always nice to have a treat.
I bet. Can you and also your blog said, I can't remember if you read that last line, but you said something about the Filipinos were kind of more in tune in a way.
Well, it's actually, it's interesting how, so I'm also mixed race. I'm half Japanese, half Russian Jewish, and I find that when I travel to different countries, which I've done a fair amount of, especially, you know, anywhere in Asia, I tend to get read the way that I want to present a lot more easier. And I think it's partly because I'm not super identifiable racially. And I think that kind of ambiguity also kind of has helped me with my gender presentation.
Interesting. Huh. Okay. But for whatever reason, the Filipinos seem to sort of get it or read you the way that you want it.
Yeah, actually, a lot of people there thought I was Filipino.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And so that was actually a lot easier. Versus being in San Francisco, versus being in other places, even in, you know, the United States of America, especially at that point in my transition, I'd only been on hormones for a little while. The way that people were picking up on how I was presenting definitely has shifted a lot since even then.
Okay. So let's talk about science. What awesome. Do you what are you passionate about science? Okay, so I have to do I have it here? You sent me this. You're gonna have to break this down. So you sent me this by email. A little bit about what I do. I work on marine and evolutionary biology and biodiversity at the California Academy of Sciences. I study the evolutionary relationship of a group of Opisthobranch mollusk called nudibranchs using molecular and morphological phylogenetic techniques. Whew. I'm interested in the evolution of chemical compound sequestration in nudibranchs and the potential these and other marine biochemicals have in human health. So I'll just stop there. Can you say some of that in kind of lay terms?
Absolutely. So yeah, I study a particular group of sea slugs, and the sea slugs that I study are found in the Indo-Pacific, which is why we were over in the Philippines. And what's really unique about these animals is that they evolve the ability to take the defense compounds from their food, from their prey items, and put them into their own tissues and use them in their own defense.
Hmm.
And so these slugs are crawling around and feeding on sponges, which use chemical toxins that they try to use to fend off things like the slugs. But once they eat them, they're actually able to take those toxins and put them in their own tissues.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm really looking at is I want to understand more about the evolution of that character. So you can look at nudibranchs as they're very similar to marine snails, but when they evolved the ability to do this, to get these defense compounds in this new way, they don't have to put as many resources towards making the shell. So they were able to lose the shell and instead rely on this really kind of interesting defense mechanism. And so what I do is I sequence their DNA, and I basically am trying to figure out how these different slugs are related and kind of how these characters arose in these various lineages.
Okay.
So that's what I do.
Okay. And there's some potential human applications, medical applications?
Yes, absolutely. So there's a lot of new kind of chemical compounds that are coming from the oceans, and nudibranchs are playing a large role in that. And so what we're finding is that sometimes the slugs are able to take these compounds just as they are, put them in their own tissues, use them the same as they were in the sponges. But other times the slug will modify these chemicals slightly, creating brand new chemical compounds that are not found anywhere else on the planet. And those compounds, they have anti-inflammatory properties. They can have basically things that would fight against tumors or cancers. And so they're being used in a lot of research to try to see if some of these new compounds can unlock some of these really kind of hard-to-crack diseases.
Wow, okay. That's amazing.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah. What do you do with high school kids to get them excited about science?
That's one of the most fun things that I do, absolutely. So at the Academy of Sciences, I work with a group of high school interns who are underrepresented in STEM fields, and it's a paid internship for them, and part of their experience there is working with a graduate student mentor. And what we're doing right now is I'm taking them through a complete research experience with in partnership with the aquarium at the Academy of Sciences. And so right now we're answering a question that doesn't have a lot of work done on it already. And so basically what I'm doing with them is I'm basically giving them the experience of doing all the steps along the way of what it actually means to do science, come up with your own research questions, to see what other people have done, like the kind of work in the past, to get the data, to analyze it, and to think about creative ways of presenting it, but in a way that is really supportive, that is teaching them science communication skills, that's having them meet professionals in the field, giving them mentors who are kind of closer in their age, who can talk about their own experiences in this process. And mm-hmm. so it's a kind of a collaboration that we're doing with multiple departments over there.
What's the current state of science education these days in public schools?
Oh, yes, that's a good question. It's arguably better in some areas, but as a whole, not so great. With the funding cuts that are happening across the board, sciences are definitely being impacted. I think that it's depending on where you are in the world. I think it depends on a lot of like what type of things are being taught, right? There's the evolution debate.
Sure.
A lot of students who don't have access to that sort of thing. But also, I think that there's a lot of changes that we're seeing in the state mandates for science education. And so arguably that could raise some of the standards, but it's also a lot harder to work on getting young people excited about science and passionate about science in a way that will make them want to go into a career in science when you're trying so hard to like you know, jam-pack their brains with certain information with standardized testing in mind.
Right. How do you use watercolor and digital media, as it says in your bio, to make science more accessible? I noticed, by the way, that I did go to the El Rio site. Not the El Rio, but the Science Neat blurb and saw that no PowerPoints.
Yes, absolutely. So I think that so actually going back to the like science education thing, I think that science can sometimes there's a stigma attached to it. There's a lot of people who grow up being like, I'm not a science person. They just kind of like shut off when you mention science. And so mm-hmm. what I really try to do is use things like storytelling or art to kind of engage folks in science who might not otherwise want to go to a science event or hear a science lecture. And that's a new kind of trend that we're seeing a lot of actually in San Francisco in general, this whole kind of like storytelling way of talking about sciences and making science personal, making the right. scientists more personal. So what I do is when I go to scientific conferences or talks, I will sketch and watercolor those talks with illustrations like in real time. And
wow.
I use those illustrations then to post to social media, to start conversations with folks who are like at the conference, for example, or just to engage people that are in my kind of like social network. It's really easy to look at, you know, a beautiful picture of a sea slug or a seahorse or something, any kind of like underwater creature, and you can relate to that a little bit more. It makes it a little bit easier to grasp and a lot quicker to get this information across. And so that's one of the ways that I try to make science a little bit easier.
Great.
For folks.
Well, with some luck, now we're recording this interview on Monday night, so hopefully by Thursday when this airs, maybe I'll have gotten from Shale an illustration we can put on our website, outinthebay.org, so you can see it. That would be really cool, because I was scratching my head for an illustration anyway. Tell us more about Science Neat.
Awesome. So Science Neat is just wrapping up its second season. And
by the way, that's neat. Like, well, actually, it's a play on words, right?
Yeah, yep. Yeah,
neat,
it's like
neat.
Not on the rocks.
It's
not on the rocks.
No ice
neat.
Cubes.
No, it's just as it is. Yep. You don't want to dilute it.
It's not straight, though, necessarily, especially not at El Rio.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Science Neat is it's a interactive happy hour that I started running because I used to tend bar for El Rio, and I started my graduate program a few years ago, and I really wanted to come up with a place to let all of the different Bay Area scientists, especially early career, come together and share science, share the newest research, but then also share it with our community. And I love El Rio. I mean, the bar is fantastic. It's got a great community feel. It's family, you know, and being there and having the outdoor space, it already kind of feels like you're in a living room, feels like you're, you know, at home. And so it's been really great to bring science there. Like, I've tried to take out all the things that they're kind of like off-putting. Like, so, like, no one's standing on stage with a PowerPoint behind them. Like, it's very personal, very one-on-one. The idea is to go experience science kind of the way we did when we were kids. Like, get your hands dirty. Like, touch these things. And I'm also trying to create opportunities for younger scientists to learn how to talk more candidly about the work that they're doing in more of an informal setting to kind of inspire
right.
those folks to start really, you know, reaching across the table and, like, talking to regular folks about like what it is that they're doing, the exciting things that we're doing here.
So who's going to be there next week? And, you know, like what are you doing next week there? Do you know?
So next week. So usually there's a theme, but this time for the Bay Area Science Festival, I decided to do something a little bit more different, actually, kind of to go off this whole kind of science story, science narrative thing that's going on. So we're having five scientists from all sorts of different backgrounds of science to come give quick lightning talks a little bit about who they are and what they're doing, and also about the actual science. So they're going to be showing off basically like different types of concepts that they're studying with hands-on activities, but it's also going to be more about who they are as people. So we've got somebody like studying insects, someone who's from NASA is coming in, a fish biologist, got all sorts of things from different fields, but the thing that kind of all bring them together is that we're all early career scientists who are doing really fascinating work right here in the Bay.
Sounds great. You're listening to Out in the Bay. My guest is Shale Matsuda, graduate student marine biology researcher at the California Academy of Sciences. Sharing with us some of his love of science and his personal story. Shale will be speaking at the Story Collider series next Tuesday evening, 7 o'clock at the Rickshaw Stop on Fell Street, and next Wednesday at Science Neat at El Rio on Mission Street near Cesar Chavez. Both events are part of the Bay Area Science Festival, which runs through November 1st. You can learn more at bayareascience.org. Out in the Bay, Gay Radio from San Francisco is an independent, nonprofit, community-supported production. Our generous donors include Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Portola Valley and Dan Kurtz of San Francisco, who hope their donations will inspire other listeners. Won't you join them? It's easy and secure to contribute online at outinthebay.org or mail a check payable to Out in the Bay to Out in the Bay, care of KALW, 500 Mansell Street, San Francisco, 94134. So what is coming up for you as far as, you know, do you have, are you, like, in the middle of, like, some really intense research right now? Do you have, like, you said you're a master's candidate. How far along are you in school?
Great question. I am hoping to wrap up this spring. I'm just doing last little bit of DNA sequencing, hopefully getting my project to publishing state, in the next few months. And right now I'm looking into PhD programs and just applied for a Fulbright. So there's a lot of options
wow.
next year going on. Yep.
Okay. Applying for the Fulbright, I think you told me when we spoke on the phone that this essay you read a little bit earlier about your kind of going through the transition or being on this field expedition while you were in the midst of your transition, that was part of what you submitted to the Fulbright folks. Is that right?
Yeah, I talked a little bit about that, definitely.
Yeah, and why? I'm curious to know how that, you know, enters into an application for a Fulbright scholarship.
Oh, definitely. Well, I mean, it's really all about being who you are. And, like, I mean, Fulbright is – they're interested in your projects, but they're also really interested in the people that they're investing in. And I think that it's one of those things where at first when I knew that I was going to transition and that this was like going to be a huge part of my life, I wasn't sure how open and out I wanted to be about it, how upfront I wanted to be. And really what I've learned, even just in the last year, is that like it or not, it's a huge part of who I am. And I find that, you know, being able to be more upfront about it is not only more true to myself, but it also opens the door for other people maybe struggling with their own relationship to gender to kind of have those conversations with me and or, you know, get more information for themselves. But I think that it's just an application like that. I mean, it'll affect me no matter where I am and where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, something that was really difficult was until, like, my legal documents changed, kind of having to talk about the discrepancies between what's on my passport and how I present these days.
Okay.
So,
by the way, where's the name Shale? Is Shale a name that, like, a family name, or did you come up with? How did it come to you?
No, it's
I've never heard
that
name
before. It's my given name.
Okay.
So my mom came up with it. I'm named after my grandfather, whose name is Saul. So we have S names.
Okay.
But yeah, it's also a type of rock.
Okay.
Which is
spelled a little differently.
Yeah, but that's actually where the name of my blog came from, which is Burgess Shale. The Burgess Shale is the largest marine invertebrate fossil deposit that we found that has basically told us more about the evolution of marine invertebrates than any other.
Wow. Fight. Okay.
So that's, up in Canada. So.
Okay. Fantastic. Is there anything, and pardon me if this is a stretch, but is there anything we can learn about human transgender issues from science, you know, specifically from biology and biodiversity? You know, sometimes gay people say, they bring up gay penguins and other examples of homosexuality in the animal world as evidence that it's not just some weird human choice that we've made. So I'm curious to know if there's anything, you know, trans in the animal world.
Well, what I would say is that the thing that we can learn from science and maybe marine organisms about gender and sexuality in general is that there is way more fluidity and there are way more things are more unexpected and more exciting than we ever would have believed. And so I would, there's not necessarily A causes B causes C, but I think that when you look at the way that sex functions in fishes, for example, where you have, clownfish is the famous example from Finding Nemo. All of the clownfishes are born male. There's one female who kind of takes care of the group. When she dies, the most robust male then changes sex into female and then takes care of the group. So you see that in a lot of marine organisms that strategy has to do with, survival and reproduction. And so it's not that there's any kind of link between, humans and fishes in that regard, but just that there's that sex and genders in that sense functions in a very, very different way in a lot of different organisms. So just to we just keep an open mind and, mm-hmm. Things aren't as surprising as we might think they are.
Okay. I also wonder if bringing a scientific mind to your transition, did that help you at all? I mean, in terms of, for example, understanding hormones and, that's all about the biology of the human body.
Yeah, I actually, in a way that you wouldn't have expected, I think that part of what actually took me so long to come to terms with the fact that I wouldn't be happy until I transitioned had to do with the fact that I came from a very scientific-minded place, that I was waiting for some kind of proof or some kind of sign that this was exactly right and I was 100% sure, and that never really came. But I think that idea of looking for proof was something that has been very engraved in me for a really long time, or looking for this evidence that, is this the right thing? And so in that sense, I think that once the ball got rolling, my scientific background has been incredibly helpful in understanding hormones and making the medical decisions that I've made in my life. I feel that I've been able to, just have a way more informed opinion on a lot of the choices that I'm making personally in my life because of just understanding simple biological systems.
Fantastic. Well, Shale, thank you very much for being here.
It's been great.
Shale Matsuda, a marine biology researcher at the California Academy of Sciences. Thank you for coming in to share your love of science and some of your personal story. Shale will be speaking at the Story Collider Inquiring Minds series event next Tuesday evening at the Rickshaw Stop and next Wednesday at Science Neat at El Rio. Did you found Science Neat? That's
yes.
Your idea? How long has it been going for?
2 years.
2 years. And I'm curious, do a lot of people show up for this?
It's been great. It's been it's usually about 150 strong.
So what time is that next? Tuesday at 6:30?
Yep, talks at 6:30.
Okay, fantastic. Both are part of the Bay Area Science Festival. At least just this one edition is part of the Bay Area Science Festival next week. The Bay Area Science Festival runs through November 1st. You can learn more at bayareascience.org. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. You can hear tonight's show, a year of past shows, and a dozen of our all-time favorites on our website, outinthebay.org, where you can also sign up for free podcasts and get the Stitcher app. That's right, Stitcher lets you hear radio programs on mobile devices. On our playing favorites page, you can hear some of our personal faves from our 10 years on the air. That's right, 10 years this month, including interviews with John Waters, Ang Lee, Leslie Gore, Matthew Shepard's mother, Judy Shepard, and a feature on Liberace. Out in the Bay is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman, with help from associate producer Nora El-Maliki. We thank KALW, our host station, for studio use and airtime, and tonight's engineer, Bob Summer. Brad Payton and Richard Merck of Portola Valley asked to be thanked on the air and hopes it will inspire others to join them in supporting Out in the Bay. It's easy, and it's likely to give you a warm, fuzzy feeling. Donate tonight online at outinthebay.org or send a check payable to Out in the Bay, care of KALW, 500 Mansell Street, San Francisco, 94134. Let us know if you'd like us to thank you or your business on the air. Our theme music was composed and performed by San Francisco musician Holly Ann Mead. Learn more about Holly on her blog, hollymead.tumblr.com. We'd love to hear from you with segment suggestions, comments, and questions. So write to us, Eric at outinthebay.com or Marilyn at outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening.